Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm just going to say it right now. There's no way we can cover everything that's in here. So I picked one topic, maybe two if we go super fast, but y'all know that's not my strength. So, I picked one verse that it talks about in your books. The placement is very good of this lesson. I like where it's positioned. The speed in which we're supposed to go through it is impossible because I listened to 3 hours of commentary on it, and they want us to go through not only what I want to talk about, but also 4 other verses through Psalms. So if you just do that, 4 times 3 is 12 hours, and I don't think anyone wants to sit and listen to me for 12 hours talk about this. Monty's already shaking his head no. He didn't even hear the first part. So there's a shift. We're starting to. We talked about David and Absalom last week, and Amnon, and we're starting to shift Amnon. We're starting to shift out of the David story and continue on with the Bible. But they put this brief snippet in. If you go to the lesson, I think it's 85, maybe 85. The lesson title is Praises to God, and that's a pretty accurate depiction, fairly accurate depiction of what's about to happen. But we've probably all spent, especially the ladies in here, have probably spent some time in Psalms, I would imagine. Psalms is a great book. What do we refer to Psalms as? Prayer book, songs, like we gather all this from Psalms, and I'm not even going to get into it. There is a division, if y'all are curious about it, I would love to talk about it. I'm hoping this isn't all the time we end up spending in Psalms. I doubt it is, but I haven't read. I imagine this is way further down the curriculum, so I'm hoping we get into it. More, but at least a brief overview. Psalms kind of has this five-part division, and there's a lot of things that come from that. You see the pattern that I always talk about, the rise and the fall is very prominent through each of the prayers and Psalms. It's written by multiple different authors. Moses had some Psalms. Obviously, probably the most commonly attributed name or the one most heard. Probably a lot of people think he wrote them all, but they haven't dug into it, as David wrote a lot of Psalms. And so there's this transition period, and what I'm going to go to here, and it's in your book, but again, I'm going to take the book, take one snippet, and I'm going to dial in on this one snippet. Throughout Psalms, we have similar thing that we do in the rest of the Bible as subtitles. And who's heard me say subtitles are not part of the original Bible? Right? A lot of people know that. One neat thing is the little italics under these. A lot of these are part of the original. So, when it says, save me, Psalms 3, if y'all haven't already turned there, Psalms 3, says, save me, oh my God. So that's not part of the Bible. And again, Psalms is a ton of poems, or a lot of poems, gathered by a ton of different authors and bound together. And then we call that Psalms. But this is a vast book. stretching a lot of information, put in a very helpful order. And I'm not going to get into all that yet. I'm going to focus on Psalms 3 because this one hit home with me. I hope it hits home with a lot of you guys. And focusing on this one because we just got through with talking about David and Absalom. Save me, O my God. And then it says, a psalm of David when he fled from Absalom, his son. So very timely. This is, I think, the first one that your book talks about. I'm going to read the memory verse real quick. Because this is, we have David set on this pedestal, right? And you have the fall of Bathsheba. And then everything kind of goes wrong. And we're going to read more about it. What I love about Psalms is when we read in whatever book, Judges, Samuel, when we read about all these stories of Moses, of David, of all these people, we kind of have a bird's eye view, right? It gives us this story that there's been movies made about, there's been shows made about, and it's all kind of looking from the top down. And then you get to Psalms, and it's a very intimate. You have this story of Absalom that we talked about, and you just kind of see the story play out, and you have a lot of guesses, you have a lot of presumptions, because your mind naturally is going to fill in these blanks. And then you hop over to Psalms 3, and it goes over David's mind during this story. And a lot of Psalms do that. And there's 12 instances of just the David text, where you have these little hints as to what's going on around them at these times. And I hope we can, it's easy this week because we just talked about Absalom last week, but I hope when we read through these we can reflect on the stories that we're being told to understand where David's mind's at this point. So, memory verse, Psalms 32:5. I acknowledged my sin to you, and I did not cover my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the iniquity of my sin. Again, Psalms verse for the memory verse, and we're going to dive into Psalms. Okay, I'm going to do a little bit of it. I'm a nerd. So, I get deep into this stuff, and I'm going to try to do it as concise as possible. I'm going to get into just very little. But if you read through Psalms, typically there's this, the highs and lows, all in one prayer, right? You have this low, which we're going to start with in Psalms 3. You're going to have this low where you see the fear of David and some anxiety starting to overtaken in the most uncomfortable place, right? If we think back to Absalom, we're going to read it, so I'm going to. But when we read these Psalms, typically there's going to be four categories of where these prayers start. In this first one in David, this is a prayer that initiates out of the emotion of fear. How many of y'all have fear? So Psalms is a book that's starting to hone us in. When you have Psalms and you have kind of this new age, a lot of people are no longer just memorizing the Torah, they're memorizing Psalms. Because this is a book that portrays how to pray. And what happens a lot of times, or what happens through a lot of these Psalms, is you see the person who's praying identify what's going on in their life. And David, you have this fear. And then we can get to it here in a minute. And one verse, if you want to read it later, in Psalms 20, you have this pain and this anguish as the place that you're praying from. And then later, you have prayers of confession. And then you have prayers of doubt, right? Where you have this conflict. Where has anybody ever been in the position where you just felt abandoned? Right? Probably all of us. But all these categories that we can put these into, what they're trying to get us to realize is that, hey, it's important to kind of delve into where this is all starting. The emotion at which your prayer arises, a lot of times what this is going to talk about pretty in depth and intensely is identifying that and walking through it with God. Because there's a lot of prayers that get thrown up that just aren't, right? That just are because you want to check a box. And what this is talking about is something way more intense. A relationship where you're starting to get into the nitty-gritty. My wife knows this. I know this about her. Probably most people in this building don't like talking much about emotion. Right? Not my favorite thing to do. Is just bottle it up and push it all day down and then never let it come out, right? That's a lot of people's reaction to it. What this is going to show us is that even in King David's life, and I would not say that David is somebody who bottles up emotion. I would say he was probably on the other end of the spectrum where he's maybe letting it shine through too much in all occasions, right? But this comes naturally to David, and we can take that, appreciate it, and try to get us up out of our pit of struggle with talking about it, and move on to a happy medium. Right? This isn't saying that you have to go out and be over-emotional and just let everything shine through and just blah it all over everybody. Right? What this is doing is it's pointing to God, and it's saying, hey, give all this to Him. Whether it's your fears, your doubts, your pain, your anguish, or whether you need to come clean about something, like our verse says, right? It's giving it to God. And that's the depiction of prayer that Psalms gives us. So I'm going to go in Psalms 3. Again, Absalom... turns his back on his own dad, right? Is coming for the kingdom. And I'm going to lock in and I'm going to do one nerdy thing with psychology because that's the only class, well, that and accounting are the only classes I liked in college. So we're going to dive into this a little bit. Psalms 3. O Lord, how many are my foes? Many are rising against me. Many are saying of my soul, there's no salvation for him in God. Selah. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory and the lifter of my head. I cried aloud to the Lord, and he answered me from his holy hill. Selah. I lay down and slept. I woke again, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of many thousands of people who have set themselves against me all around. Who knows that song? Right? Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for you strike all my enemies on the cheek. You break the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing be on your people. Selah. I'm going to stop there. Can y'all believe that I listened to 3 hours of stuff on that? Doesn't sound like it, right? But let's start in the beginning. O Lord, how many are my foes? Again, this is David. Absalom raises a very large army to overthrow him. This is the fear coming out in David right now. What's he afraid for? His life. His own son has turned all of his people against him. Who'd be scared? He leaves with, we read about it last week, he leaves with some sojourners and a select group of his people, but against him arose a huge army. Armies that he has overthrown kingdoms with. Men of valor, not just this small group of nobodies, right? They took his own people. He took his own people that he ruled over. Absalom is now spreading this anti-David throughout all the camp. And remember, when we talked about it last week, he did even brought David's own supervisor in, not supervisor, counselor in. Not unbeknownst to him, right? Not even to the counselor. He brought him in, and then all of a sudden people are blowing horns, and his select people that he's placed in all these tribes look over and they say, what is going on? And they announce Absalom king. And when the people look to Absalom, what do they see? David's guy and David's army. That's pretty easy to buy into, and David recognizes this and is forced to flee from his own home. He flees from his own home, he takes a small group of people, he leaves some concubines to take care of the household, and he tells, again, he tells a sojourner, he says, why don't you just stay here with what? King Absalom. This is total defeat. This isn't like, doesn't inspire any confidence. To follow David means you're loyal to that guy even though you read the tea leaves. Which is everybody in his own kingdom, his army, his, to him what it looks like, his counselor. Everybody in his own kingdom has turned his back on him. And what are they going to do now? They're going to pursue his life. And David's been in this spot before, right? But never to this extent. And what happens in the David story, once Bathsheba happens, is he takes all this and starts doing this to David. He takes everything that God's given him, and then he sees what's good, and he takes it for himself. And there lies the fall of David. And so, as an outside looking in, what are you seeing right now? Not good, right? They probably want to follow Absalom. So we're going to keep reading just this next line. Many are saying of my soul, there is no salvation for him in God. Cool. Again, this is David praying to God. What are his two concerns? Fear for his life. And the second is, hey, everybody around me is saying that you left me. Everybody around me is saying that you're not going to bring me out of this. Everybody around me is saying that I'm the next Saul. Right? Because his whole story. He's lived with that. He's seen it. He's witnessed it. He watched when God's Spirit left, when he was anointed, rushed on to David. David started doing the right things, and a bad spirit was on Saul. And what did that cause Saul to do? Lots of bad things. Stop seeking counsel of God. Pursued David's life. A lot of bad things, right? So, this is where we get into a little bit of human psychology. I'm not going to nerd out too much, hopefully, about this because I'm already down to 15 minutes. But fear is a natural response with everybody. Monty, you ever been scared? No, I didn't think so. I asked Monty first. Fear is when you are driving down the highway and somebody comes on the wrong lane. And your eyes get this big. Fear is when you hear moms pulling babies out of cars and doing incredible feats that there's no way it's possible, right? Those glands start firing and you get all this rush of adrenaline and then you're able to do crazy things. And that's fear. That's life. That's fear of life. If Buddy was trapped in a car, Jaden's little, but she'd probably do something. I don't know what it would be, break a window or something. But something that I wouldn't normally attribute Jaden to. when you're scared for your life, for physical harm, for just whatever's happening, for crazy instances where danger are there. That's your flight or fight response, right? And I do not like this word. I've had to come to grips with this word. I never thought I would struggle with it. Then you have kids and you worry about it. Anxiety. I always brush that to the side. Because I'm like, okay, yeah. I mean, that's way overused nowadays, don't get me wrong. But there's a reality. And that term was coined by, I think, in around the 60s, this guy's name's Rollo. Kind of a cool name. But this Rollo guy kind of separated fear and anxiety. And when we typically get anxious, it's like fear is like this momentary thing, right? Once you're out of it, it's gone. Anxiety is something that you wrestle with much deeper. When the clouds are gray and they just don't seem to brighten up. When it's just raining all the time and you can't seem to get out, you can't find the sunny patch. Anxiety is something that eats, especially nowadays, eats a lot of people up. But they're separate. And the reason I think this is important is the first line is fear. Oh Lord, how many are my foes? Many are rising against me. That's fear. There's a momentary, if this passes, is he any longer afraid of a giant army against him? No. If it's not there, what's there to be scared about? Second line is anxiety. Many are saying of my soul, there's no salvation for him in God. That's a scary thought. That's a scary thought. Because who was David originally?
Man after God's own heart.
But right from the beginning, he's just a young, scrawny shepherd. Who brought him into a place of kingship? God. He had no right to the throne. He had no heir to the throne. He had what? Nothing. He was a shepherd. He's a man after God's own heart. So what does that mean if that gets taken away? He lost everything. He lost his entire identity. Because from the time Samuel comes knocking on the door and he looks at the firstborn and he goes, man, this guy is a big, strong man, ruddy in appearance, right? He's handsome, he's big, his stature is, kingly. And God says, no. And he goes down the list of David's brothers and he's like, hey, some of these look good to me, but God's saying no. You got anybody else? Because he sent me here. It's like, well, I've got this one kid who's out shepherding the flock. But he's just a boy. And he comes in and he walks in front of Samuel and God says, yes. The runt. He takes the runt. And then very shortly after that, what does he do? Slays Goliath. Impossible odds. Who does he attribute that to? God. Then after that, what does he do? He attributes what to God? He attributes that Samuel was not able to take his life. God delivered him several times from Samuel's hand. Whether it be throwing the spear at him while he's playing the harp, or whether it be the times that Saul pursued his life. And God gave him into his hand. We talked about that a lot. Who does David attribute that to? God. Then he turns to king for a few years. And it's his separate tribe of Judah. And then all the kingdoms come together and he's kinged over everybody. And up until this point, he's attributing everything the right way to God. So if you think about all those years, his whole identity, a man after God's own heart, his whole identity is wrapped up in God. So what's this anxiousness about? It's that people are saying he's completely lost his identity. And he has. Because it starts off with Bathsheba, and then what happens after he does that? He doesn't own up to it and make a big grand apology. What does he do? He sends her husband straight into battle, and he murders him. Boy, this is getting twisted fast. And this is on public display for everybody. And so when people are looking at King David now, they're saying, what once they held him, they put him on a pedestal, and they held him as man after God's own heart, and they saw him as this grander king. He's still alive, and the kingdom's being taken from him. Everything that he should have done, he's not doing. Is he a good dad? I don't know. One of his sons raped his daughter. Then the other one kills him in front of everybody. So, is he a good dad? I mean, if we saw that take place nowadays, we'd probably say, hey, something's wrong with those parents. Right? Is he a good king? Well, his whole kingdom just turned against him. So, not sure you'd call him a good king at this point. Maybe back in his day, he was a good king. When he had everything lined up. Everything that he was has been stripped from him. And through that process, he lost his whole identity, which was always wrapped up in God. He's a has-been. And worse than that, he's back to a place that his identity is stripped from him, and in this prayer, he's trying to find it again. Which I can only imagine God saying, hey, we should have figured this out a little while ago. It took me taking everything for you to find it again. Oh, really? Wow.
Or he wouldn't have been able to pray to God. He didn't lose everything.
He didn't lose everything. That's a good point.
That's what I feel sometimes.
But what I want us to see is that, and I hope it speaks to some of the people in the room, I know it speaks to myself, is when we're talking about somebody being anxious, having anxiety, it means they're having an identity crisis. It means that things, it's not a fear. It's not something that is just here and then it's gone and it vanishes. It's something that looms. The clouds are gray and you're struggling with who you are. You're struggling with whatever your foundation was, you're struggling with it. And here David's struggling with it. He's wrestling with it. He's no longer a king. He's been run out of his kingdom, and he gets that back. But he's no longer a king. He gets ran out. As far as father goes, it doesn't look like he's winning any awards. We read this whole thing, and you see that stripped from him. And so, first we start off with fear. Oh Lord, how many are my foes? Many are rising against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no salvation for him in God. Selah. Goes to anxiety. And that many are saying of my soul, there is no salvation for him in God. everything that I've built myself on previously and listened to and been in tune with you, people are saying that you're not even with me. But you, O Lord, and here's where it turns. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory and the lifter of my head. I cried aloud to the Lord, and he answered me from his holy hill. What's he saying? You're still there. I cry out to you, and you answer me from his holy hill. Again, David, this is a reference to David putting the tabernacle on the hill. This is an intimate area here. I lay down and slept. I woke again, for the Lord sustained me. It's almost like he's having this revelation as he's praying. He starts out with his woes, right? His fears and his anxieties. And he sees the tables shift. So now what's he doing? Sleeping. Who sleeps well when they're anxious, when they're fearful? Nobody. Saying, I lay down and slept. You gave me rest. I woke again, for the Lord sustained me. You gave me breath for the next day. And that's going right to what you said, that it didn't take everything. I will not be afraid of many thousands of people. So this fear turns into this peace of, I will not be afraid of many thousands of people who have set themselves against me all around. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for you strike all my enemies on the cheek. You break the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing be on your people. The initiation of this prayer starts with fear, anxiety, worry. How many people can relate to that? Probably all of us. And you see David at this point. And again, we often do this at the lowest of lows. David's in the lowest of lows. And it brings him right back to who? To God. Is that a mercy on God's end? Because if David would have kept everything, you think he would have just all of a sudden straightened out? Or did it maybe take some God's way to get him back? Amongst all this, he says, I lay down and I slept. But you, O Lord, are a shield. Verse 3. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me. That sounds weird. Right? I'm going through all of this. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory and the lifter of my head. Where's his confidence come from? Who holds his head up high? God. I cried aloud to the Lord, and he answered me from his holy hill. Selah. I lay down and slept. I woke again, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of many thousands of people who have set themselves against me. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for you strike all my enemies on the cheek. You break the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing be on your people, Selah. That is a powerful prayer. And there's a lot that are going to be like it, and that's why I hope we dive into Psalms more. But you can typically, when you read through Psalms, because I imagine there's even books about it, your daily psalm. I hope when we read those, we recognize, because this just sounds, if you don't put it all together, it just sounds like this, like a really good poem or song, right? And a lot of times when we read Psalms, we miss the gravity, the weight that's felt in this moment. You don't necessarily put David in you place him at this stage where you understand that everything own son has raised an army against him and seeks his life. If we put all that together and understand the fear, and then you read into it deeper and you see the anxiety of David realizing that he's completely lost his identity. These poems, these psalms, man, they should hit home a lot. These are a guide for prayer, a guide for seeking counsel from God, a guide for relationship with God. And it's going to take a little self-awareness. It's going to take a little honesty with ourselves. David in this moment has recognized it and is honest. He didn't say, hey, why'd you do this?
It was the woman.
All right. He said, hey, I'm lost. The grumblings around me are that you're not even with me. My own son has raised thousands against me. And then you see him revert back to who he is, who he's always been, before he started to lose a handle on things. And then God restores his position. I'd encourage y'all, read through the book, but read through it gives several more passages to read through, and like I said, there's no way I was going to get through. I barely got through one, and I'm late, so y'all can laugh at me. But read through it. If you're reading through Psalms, if you're doing a daily psalm, if you're doing these things, try and understand it deeper. Try to relate it and overlay these things with your genuine concerns. Because a lot of people will just read that and say, hey, that's my prayer for the day. David's incredibly intimate in this moment. I would encourage y'all to do the same, because prayer is a powerful thing. You can even see the shift in him just through this one prayer, through this one poem. And I hope that we can all get to that place where we can be honest, we can recognize, and we can open up. So thank y'all for being here. Next week we're going to move on to Solomon. I'm not sure how many weeks we'll spend on him. He's a little bit of a shorter story. But we'll start working through that. And then I think here in a couple weeks you have another opportunity to fire me if you want to. Thank y'all.